I'll call David Pearl versus Dale Hampshire.
May it please the court, I'm Greg Gober and I represent appellant David Pearl. And I think we both, counsel for Appalee and our firm, made it clear in the request for oral arguments that we consider this case to be, you know, a very important case. There are not very many cases involving internet forums or chat rooms or things like that out there. And these new forms of online communication, internet forums, there are comments to newspaper articles. You get on the newspaper website, you read an article, it invites you to make a comment. Other people may see your comment, reply to your comment. There's this free flow exchange of ideas that's occurring on the internet every day. Even MySpace pages, you can get on someone's MySpace page and make a comment if it's open to you. I mean, there are just a myriad of different ways where people can engage in discussions on the internet now, and this is going to become more and more prevalent. Unfortunately, one of the aspects of this internet communication is anonymity. You can get on the internet in these message boards or on someone's MySpace page or on the newspaper comment page, and no one knows who you are. You just register and use an email address, and no one knows who you are. And that engenders a certain amount of, a veneer of invincibility or maybe invisibility. No one knows who you are, so you can say anything, and there are no consequences. And so I think these types of online communications are going to lead to a lot more defamation cases once people, you know, get upset about it and start tracking the people down who made the comments, as happened in this case. But in those types of cases, jurisdiction is always going to be an issue. I think I've had in my entire career four special appearances that I've argued. Two of them have involved internet because it's kind of a murky area. And I think it's very important, or this case is very important, because of the context in which the comments were made, and there was more or less an exchange of communication between the parties. But no matter what the medium of the communication, the test for personal jurisdiction is still purposeful availment. In the Michiana case, the Texas Supreme Court said purposeful availment is the touchstone of jurisdictional analysis. And the factors that we look at are that only the defendant's contacts are relevant. We disregard the plaintiff's contacts. The contacts have to be purposeful. They can't just be random or fortuitous. And you can't be hailed into a jurisdiction based upon the unilateral acts of a third party. And I think it's important in this case to look at the context of the communications kind of chronologically. What happened is, there's a website. Yahoo has a subset of its website called the finance part. And then on the finance part, there are different sub-websites for virtually every company that has a stock ticker on the New York Stock Exchange or the NASDAQ or whatever. And then on that part of the Yahoo website, there is another subset for a message board for people who want to discuss the particular company because they're interested in its stock or its product, or they work there and they're interested in the future of the company. But in any event, this website here concerns the AXA insurance company. And it's the Yahoo Finance AXA message board. And chronologically what happened was Mr. Dale Abshire was at one time an employee of Money, which at some time was merged with AXA, and he had an axe to grind for whatever reason. So approximately 10 years ago, he began going on the AXA message board on Yahoo and making comments about ACSA and posting links to his own websites, which detailed his conspiracy theories that ACSA or money executives had engaged in some types of conspiracies with various public officials. And he did so purposefully to go out and drum up traffic for his own internet websites. He wanted the attention. He interjected himself out onto the worldwide web. All of this occurred. Mr. David Pearl works for ACSA. He's sitting in his living room or somewhere in his home in New York and sees this. He doesn't come to Texas. He doesn't call Mr. Abshire. He doesn't email Mr. Abshire. He's sitting at his home in Texas, gets on the Yahoo message board, and sees these comments. Other people see these comments, too. And in one time, there was a user on the ACSA message board who went by the name TT Police, like Texas Tech or anyway, double T Police. And that person posted a message discussing Mr. Abshire, who, by the way, always used his own name when he signed his messages or his post. This other user, TT Police, made comments about Mr. Abshire having been, you know, terminated for cause and sexually harassed women in Texas and the fact that he was a former money employee who lived in Texas. Meanwhile, Mr. Pearl, still sitting in his home in New York, sees this post by this other person, this TT Police person. He gets on the internet at some point in time later, gets on the message board again, and he sees post by Mr. Abshire, again attacking his employer, his company. This makes him angry, as outlined in his deposition in response to questions from Mr. Abshire's counsel. And in response to Mr. Abshire's post attacking ACSA, he basically regurgitates what he's heard before. The cycle repeats. I think there are five or six different messages from Mr. Abshire that he posted on this message board. I mean, from Mr. Pearl that he posted on this message board. Every one of them, it's undisputed in the record, every one of them was in response to a message board post that was made by Mr. Abshire. Mr. Pearl gets on. He, again, regurgitates over and over again this story he's heard from some unknown person.
Is that in the record?
That's in the record. Well, for better or worse, I mean, there's absolutely nothing purposeful about his acts. No malice he didn't think ahead of time, clearly. He's reactive. He's sitting in New York. He finds out something from some unknown person. Mr. Abshire makes him angry. He spews it out again and again and again. That is about as fortuitous as it comes. He never goes to Texas to collect the information, which in the Revell case out of the Fifth Circuit, they pointed out was, you know, an important aspect. He doesn't know basically who he got the information from. He doesn't know who these other people are that he's giving the information to, because he doesn't, by virtue of the anonymity of these internet message boards, he doesn't know who any of these other people are who read the board. He has no idea if they live in Texas. That's all in the record. And that's why this case is very important, because there are people on the internet who go out and basically, for want of a better word, try to stir up trouble. They go on message boards for like a company like ACSA. In my brief, I compared it to someone walking into a convention and who begins just shouting about the sub. You know, if it's an NRA convention, someone who might walk into an NRA convention and just start shouting about guns, you know, and how guns are bad. You've got to expect a response when you do something like that. When you go on a message board for people with a shared interest and you make comments like Mr. Abshire did, you're going to expect a response, and the record reflects that he got a response. He's been doing this for over 10 years. He's aware of the fact that he's going to get responses, and people have made a lot of vitriolic statements to him over the years. It's patently unfair for Mr. Abshire basically to inject himself out into the World Wide Web. Mr. Pearl sitting in his living room, minding his own business in New York. Mr. Abshire is the one who reaches out to him. Mr. Pearl is not reaching out to Texas. He's sitting there. He's reacting to something that's occurring to him, just like in the Michiana case. The distributor of motorhomes is sitting in his office. I can't remember if it's in Michigan or Indiana, or it's on the border somewhere, therefore the name Michiana. But he's sitting somewhere up in the Midwest. He picks up the phone. Someone calls him, says, could you sell me an RV? And the guy says, yeah. And then he gets sued down in Texas for making a representation on that phone call that was initiated by the person here in Texas. And the Supreme Court, the Texas Supreme Court said, there can't be jurisdiction in that case. That's not purposeful. That person didn't do anything to reach out to Texas. Texas, or a Texas resident, reached out to them and made the contact, and that can't form the basis of jurisdiction. If jurisdiction were to hold up in this case, you know, anybody could get out on the internet and say anything to stir something up, and then if they didn't like what the other person said in response to them, then they could sue that person in their own state. I mean, if the special appearance were to be granted, they were reversed and rendered, it wouldn't mean that Mr. Abshire wouldn't have a remedy. He could still go to New York. He could still sue Mr. Pearl. He has a remedy. All it would mean is that due process prevents us from bringing Mr. Pearl, who never left his own living room, who never reached out to Texas in any way, down here to be sued. Going back to the issue of who he directed his comments to. And there are a couple of different cases. One, I think, is very much on point, the Young case out of the Fourth Circuit. There was a case where the Hartford Current newspaper, wrote a series of articles about a Virginia prison. And the interest in the Virginia prison was that Connecticut prisoners had been transferred down there. Connecticut newspaper wrote a series of articles and said some things about the warden in the Virginia prison. They knew they were discussing a Virginia resident. They knew they were discussing things that occurred in Virginia. And the Fourth Circuit said there can't be jurisdiction in Virginia over the Hartford newspaper because their audience, their intended audience, was people in Connecticut. Well, in this case, the intended audience was a group of unknown people on the internet. We don't even know what state they're in. But there's no evidence that anyone in Texas ever read any of these statements by Mr. Pearl.
Looking at the Fifth Circuit authority that both parties have referred to in this case, what test do you propose if we were to look to the Fifth Circuit for guidance in analyzing this? Which test would you suggest that we apply here?
Well, I think there are a number of factors that they said you ought to look at. One is, did you go out and get the information from Texas sources? Did you conduct some type of investigation in Texas? And in that Fifth Circuit case, it was a gentleman that had some conspiracy theory about, I believe it was Pan Am 103, the airliner that went off the coast of, it was the Lockerbie bombing. He had a conspiracy theory about the Lockerbie bombing. And he didn't come to Texas, of course, to get any of that information. He just the subject of his article just happened to be a person down in Texas. The subject, he posted, I think, a PDF file on one of these message boards that people could access. So one of the things ought to be, did you come to Texas or to the forum state to get your information? The other ought to be, did you direct your comments to a Texas audience?
Let me ask you, in Calder versus Jones, I believe, one of the Fifth Circuit cases, the court applied what it called an effects test, which essentially provides that the jurisdiction may be proper where the effects of a defendant's conduct in one state may cause injury in the forum state. Isn't that what we have in this situation?
Well, it is, but if you look at the Michiana case out of the Texas Supreme Court, it specifically talked about Calder, and in Calder it's very distinguishable from this case because they knew they were publishing 600,000 copies of that National Enquirer in California. And Michiana, and if you look at the Michiana case and the Nath case, N-A-T-H, out of the Houston Court of Appeals that cited, I believe the Michiana case basically says we don't judge it solely on the effects. I mean, you may look at that as one component, but the Nath case specifically says the Michiana, in Michiana, the Texas Supreme Court discarded the effects test. I mean, it's, I think it's almost a verbatim quote from Nath, is their interpretation of Michiana is the effects test is just discarded because the effects test looks at the contacts between the plaintiff and the forum rather than the defendant in the forum. Because you're looking at the plaintiff's going to suffer something in Texas as opposed to what the defendant did to reach out to Texas.
Thank you, Mr. Gober. You'll have 5 minutes rebuttal, so.
Thank you.
Mr. Chapman?
May it please the court. Starting first with the Calder question the court just asked, I think a fair reading of Michiana is that the Supreme Court in Texas looks for effects plus. The fundamental reason for that is under our forum nonconvenience laws, if there aren't effects in Texas, we're not a convenient forum for litigation, particularly in tort cases. And that comes primarily out of the changes in our forum nonconvenience laws in the early 1990s. But in order for there to ultimately be jurisdiction, fair play, and substantial justice under the guidelines of the U.S. Supreme Court, the forum state has to have an interest in resolving the dispute, and the fundamental interest that would support a forum state being involved in dispute is that the effects of the tort were felt there. So Michiana doesn't completely throw out the idea of the effects test. It looks for effects and more. And in this particular case, I think we do have that. We clearly have the effects in Texas. Mr. Abshire's been defamed. He's been accused of being a member of NAMBLA, the National Association of Man-Boy Love, which is both illegal pederasty because it involves an adult male and a minor male, and also in Texas there are the homosexual issues. You have accusations that he was terminated for sexually molesting employees, which is another form of criminal conduct. So there are multiple allegations or multiple statements alleging as a matter of fact his engagement in activities in Texas, which are illegal or viewed as so morally pejorative that it constitutes defamation per se. The only question raised in the special appearance, and given the admission by Mr. Pearl that he made these statements, really the only disputed factual issue in the case other than what damages, if any, is Mr. Abshire entitled to, is did he reach out to Texas? And in his posts, and in looking at this, this is also a significant basis for distinction from the this court's FBI case. We have a statement, Mr. Abshire, you're the laughingstock of Texas. Mr. Abshire is based in Texas and in the Fort Worth offices of Moni. Did he fondle chicks in Texas recently? He's a pervert.
But those all go back to what you described as the effects.
They're also specific references to a subjective belief Mr. Abshire is in Texas. The prong of the test that Mr. Pearl focuses on is that only his contacts are relevant to this inquiry. Only his subjective belief of the location of the victim of his defamation is relevant to this inquiry. Now, the second part of that is problematic under our procedural rules. Since we're talking about a movant's subjective belief, seeking to establish something as a matter of law, that he did not purposefully avail himself of Texas, that's actually impossible. His subjective belief cannot establish something as a matter of law. But assuming that it can, and as convoluted as defamation jurisdictional analysis is, let's assume that that is an exception to our evidentiary standard for the use of affidavits in hearings in state court. The court is entitled to make an evaluation of his credibility. And his explanation was, I thought he was in Texas, or I thought he was in Colorado, not in Texas. Yet all of his statements that are contemporaneous refer to Mr. Abshire being in Texas. The trial court is entitled to find his testimony incredible and unbelievable. And it did so when it denied their motion. And that evidence was clearly before it because it overruled our objections to that portion of Mr. Pearl's affidavit stating that Mr. Abshire was supposedly in Colorado as far as he knew. So once we have that credibility issue resolved by the court, that the court found that there was sufficient evidence to believe that Mr. Pearl had a subjective belief Mr. Abshire was in Texas and included that in his posts, then clearly we have purposefully reaching out to an audience in Texas because part of that audience is Mr. Abshire, who is a Texan. How many other Texans may or may not have read this? How many other people who are interested in Mone and AXA and their issues may or may not have read this is not an issue before this court today. As long as one person somewhere other than Mr. Abshire read Mr. Pearl's allegations that Mr. Abshire was a member of NAMBLA, that he molested female coworkers, was terminated for molesting female coworkers, that's defamation per se.
How would you distinguish this case from the Revel case, the Fifth Circuit Revel case, which has very similar facts?
I think the primary distinction is the contemporaneous documentation indicating a contemporaneous belief he's in Texas. Now, if you look at this and compare it to, say, Calder or, again, the Abul Hassad FBI case, I think in both of those cases, the courts were hamstrung by the arguments made by the parties. Both of those cases seem to be more likely to properly be Keaton analysis cases. That is to say, you're talking about national publications. The circulation of this board, while it is available nationally, is too small to justify a Keaton analysis. So we do need to look at the Calder analysis. And if we look at the Calder analysis, we definitely have Effects Plus. And that is sufficient to allow the court to find jurisdiction. One of the other distinctions is here we do have a credibility determination that the court affirmatively found based on the conflicting evidence from Mr. Pearl's affidavit and his contemporaneous posts that he was reaching out to Texas.
Oh, I mean, are you saying that the difference between the two cases is that in this case the defendant knew that his alleged target was a Texas resident, and in the Revel case, although the target was a Texas resident, the defendant did not know that?
I think that's one of the bases for distinguishing between the two cases. Yes, Your Honor. You know, we have direct knowledge, or we have a disputed fact, which the court resolved in the favor of the non-movement, making a credibility determination, and found that he knew Mr. Abshire was in Texas, and therefore purposely reached out to Texas to slap Mr. Abshire around. Now, we also get an interesting argument on invitation, and were these invited comments? And as I'm very fond of the phrase invitation to fisticuffs, since we've argued that before this court before. Mr. Abshire's posts, while they are argumentative, were of the nature of, let's discuss the merits of alleged misconduct, which Mr. Abshire believes was actual misconduct, of AXA and Mone. He was not rebutted on the facts. He was attacked personally, which is both a logical fallacy in an argument, and also it upgrades an invitation to fisticuffs to let's have a gunfight, oops, I'm sorry, you left yours at home. Texas has an interest in protecting its citizens from torts. Texas has no interest in protecting the actions of a coward. Mr. Abshire posted with his name and invited factually based arguments on the merits of the conduct of AXA and Mone. In return, he was defamed with statements about his character and conduct which amount to defamation per se under Texas law, by a man who not only did not use his own name, but used multiple names to the point where he could not remember every internet handle or nickname that he used, so that he could repeat and compound his defamation. And under those circumstances, that was purposeful conduct by Mr. Pearl. He cannot complain that he was dragged into Texas by the unanticipated actions of Yahoo. Yahoo was available in Texas. And frankly, even if he were correct in his subjective belief that Mr. Pearl was in Colorado, we would then simply have a transferred intent case, because in this particular instance, targeting the direct individual, you would say, well, you thought he was in Colorado, he was actually in Texas. That's no different than throwing a rock at what you thought was Bill and hitting Phil. We transfer your intent. He intended to reach out of New York and throw a rock at a person in another state. He knew he was in Texas. He threw the rock to Texas, and he hit the guy in Texas.
Was there any evidence showing who created this web bulletin, this particular one? I mean, I guess there's different subject matters that you can create.
The particular forum is hosted by Yahoo. So from that perspective, Yahoo creates a forum for discussion on financial topics related to, among other things, AXA and money. And then individual threads will be created by different people with different issues. A comparison might be the Fort Worth Star-Telegram would have a forum on football. There's a sub-forum dealing with South Lake Carroll. And then different people can post about South Lake Carroll and its coach. To use that specific example, last year they did not make the playoffs because they tried to run a clock play, had never practiced it, and the quarterback fumbled the snap. And the coach then blamed the quarterback, who'd never taken a snap from under center, for being unprepared. You could post on that forum and say, that's bad coaching. It's the coach's responsibility to make sure that the players are prepared. This is not about the player. This should be about the coach. That invites a discussion about whose responsibility it is in-game and in-game preparation to be ready. If you make that post and instead you get a response that, well, you're a member of NAMBLA, why should we take you seriously? It doesn't matter who started the post. Someone has dragged it off track, and that's what we have here.
But once somebody creates a subcategory or a thread or whatever, can't that same person delete it? Or once it's created, is it there forever?
It's actually a tricky question, technologically speaking. A monitor for a forum can, if they have certain administrative capabilities that the software can support, go in and delete a particular thread. Customarily, they'll issue what's called a mod warning and ultimately block a particular ISP from using the website. And we've gone way outside the record at this point.
Okay.
But bear with me.
What I was getting at, of course, is if he was offended, why didn't he just say shut it down?
He was not a moderator or monitor of the Yahoo forums. That would require an action by Yahoo.
Okay. Thank you.
And even if Yahoo had deleted the particular thread as it existed in that time, it would be cached or stored in the memory of every computer that had been to that website until it was refreshed or erased. So much like if the New York Times runs a defamatory article, just because they've pulled everything off the shelves they can find, people have already bought it and take it home, still have that article. So the defamation persists in the ether of the internet. That's why we should never email our Social Security numbers. It's in little bits and packages somewhere.
Yeah.
Is it safe to say that this, if we were to uphold this ruling in this case, this would be the only case out there at this point in which a court has exercised personal jurisdiction over someone who's posted a allegedly slanderous message on a message board? Are you aware of any case in which a court has exercised, a reported case which a court has exercised jurisdiction under similar facts.
Thank you for adding that reported qualifier, because I was trying to remember if two from another state were reported or not. I'm pretty sure they're not reported. I think it would be the first time with a forum such as Yahoo, yes. I think also that it would not be the first time if we think of a Yahoo forum as the equivalent of letters to the editor in, say, The New Yorker or another magazine. The Internet has become our publishing house and our magazines for the country. And the anonymity of the Internet encourages cowardly behavior, the behavior of bullies, the belief you can do this and not be held accountable. And fortunately, magazines require you to give names before they publish letters. But it is certainly well established. If you publish a defamatory statement in a newsletter or in a newspaper, you can be held accountable for it, even in another state, under certain circumstances. And this case meets all of those circumstances. And
the circumstances being that there was some purposeful contact with the forum state.
Yes, Your Honor. May I have permission to explain a little further if you need anything else?
No, not at this. I mean, I think you answered my question.
Okay.
You said yes, so I'll take that as your answer. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Gober.
I would like to clarify one item in the record there. Since Mr. Abshire was getting on the Internet and posting these comments about AXA, I think there are a number of comments in the record of people who were saying things back to him, not all of which were from my client, and the NAMBLA comment was not from Mr. Pearl. There are five or six comments from Mr. Pearl, and they all concern sexual harassment or things of that nature. But that particular comment was not ours. But it does illustrate the kind of the effect that the responses that he engendered when he went on, you know, this forum and said what he said. It made a lot of people very angry, and it solicited responses. I'd like to address the one question from Judge Casey. I believe you asked if Mr. Pearl knew that the target of the defamation was a Texas resident, is that determinative? I believe it would be a factor. But that goes back to the effects test that I think even counsel admitted it's got to be effects plus. I mean, just the fact that you know he's a Texas resident, that's kind of intertwined with the effects test, because you know if he's a Texas resident, that's where the effect is going to lie. If all you have is that, well, I know where he lives, then there's really no distinction between that and the effects test, I think. So there's got to be something more than that. And I believe all of the cases basically use language to the effect of you've got to direct your comments toward a Texas audience or toward an audience in the forum state.
So isn't that what's happened here?
Well,
given the fact that he knew that the target, if you will, was a Texas resident, and yet he posted this message that personally attacked. Isn't that directed at?
Well, it's directed at a Texas resident, but it's not directed at a Texas audience. If you look at the Nath case, the John Hopkins versus Nath case, it's almost identical to this case, I believe, except for the fact that it occurs one-on-one at a symposium at John Hopkins University in Baltimore instead of in an Internet forum. What happened in that case was there was a doctor speaking at the seminar, some patients of a doctor from Texas, from a Houston doctor, came up to him after the seminar and asked to speak to him. And in that one-on-one conversation, or that conversation with several of the patients from Texas, he defamed the Houston doctor, knowing that the doctor was in Houston, and saying that he had been terminated for cause from Baylor University Medical School in Houston, and that he didn't perform the procedures that he promised, and that he was under an FBI investigation, all kinds of defamatory comments in a one-on-one situation. And the Houston Court of Appeals said, we don't look at the effects test anymore after Michiana. We don't look at where the resident where the person lives and where the effects are felt, we look at who the intended audience was. And they said, your intended audience was a group of people in Baltimore. So there's no jurisdiction in that case, even though you knew the guy lived in Texas and you were talking about Texas conduct, i.e. being terminated from Baylor University and being under an FBI investigation. So they said you don't just look at where the plaintiff lives, because that is looking at the contact between the plaintiff and the forum rather than the defendant in the forum. And I don't think that case is distinguishable except for the fact that it occurs, you know, kind of one-on-one, an old-fashioned, you know, form of communication rather than this new online form of communication. And I'd like to close. Mr. Pearl will still be held accountable, or can still be held accountable. If you reverse and render on this case, all that has to happen is he needs to be sued in Long Island where he lives instead of here. And justice would not be denied Mr. Abshire in that case. And I respectfully request that the court reverse the judgment of the trial court and render judgment that there's no personal jurisdiction over Mr. Pearl.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Gober. Mr. Chapman, the court appreciates both of your appearances here this morning to present your arguments. The case is submitted, and you're both excused. Thank you.